It's business time, baby.
The Sala Monster sounds off.
My client,
Mama Monster,
conquered the streak.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
Fat delete.
You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
I hope you all survived the bomb cyclone this week. If you live on the East Coast, here in the Northeast, this weather was just completely ridiculous. Very scary. I know there's a lot of people still without power, a lot of homes damaged. Thankfully, none over here where I am, but I know some of you may have been affected by it. So hopefully everybody is safe and sound. I am exhausted. I'm going to let you guys know right off the bat here. I have been running back and forth to the hospital just to visit my mother the last few days. Things have not been good. I am going to be back there again, in fact, just as soon as I'm done recording this. I'm pretty much going back and forth there every day, completely sleep-deprived and stressed out, which is not a good combination. I did not watch NXT, but I did watch Raw and SmackDown, all the key stuff, all the key stories this week. I'm all caught up on that. I also am going to get into some other stories here. There's some other news during the week, so we'll talk about all that, but instead of wasting any more time, we'll get right into it. This is episode 537 of the Sala Monster Sounds Off here for Sunday, March 4th, 2018. I am a very tired Sala Monster. Audible, you guys know the drill. They've been a great partner to this podcast now for a number of years. Audibletrial.com/Sala Monster. If you've already cashed in and gotten your free book, if you've tried the 30-day trial of the service and you're not able to, or you don't have another credit card you want to put it on, spread the link around. Let other people know about it. You can get one free audiobook of your choice just by signing up for the service for 30 days. You can sample it out. If you don't like it, you don't have to stick with it. You get to keep your one free book no matter what. Audibletrial.com/Sala Monster is the link to use for that. Of course, if you guys want to support the show by PayPal, you know where to go. TheSalaMonster.com. PayPal button's on the right-hand side of the page. It's all paid up on rent. The button never moves. It's been in the same place now for a number of years. $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname and a shout-out. Actually, right at the top here, I want to congratulate Lester, one of our listeners. Lester and his girlfriend, who gave birth to a healthy baby boy on Wednesday, aptly named Noah. I want to say also thank you to all of our usual supporters here. John Loose Cannon Lopez, Deadpool James Herrera, Out of Control Cody Thomas, the Florida Freebird, Brian Becerra. By the way, there was a post in our Facebook group earlier in the week, and somebody asked the question, does everybody listen to the PayPal shoutouts? Do you skip over them? I was surprised by how many people said, what, are you kidding me? You can't skip over the PayPal shoutouts. It's like a rite of passage here on this show. I was like, wow, okay, that's pretty cool. Like, the majority of people said they stuck with it. It's become sort of like a staple. And then you have the people who just like hearing their names called out. But I thought that was actually kind of cool. Anyway, Beast Mode, Brock Joseph, the Florida Freebird, if I didn't mention him already, Brian Becerra, Raymond the Mountie Medina, Massgrave, Micah Harshaw, Damn Straight, Michael Dorsey, the Dark Serpent, Derek Gibbs, Velvet Revolver, Robert Murray, Aim for the Head, Andrew Jorlog, the Show Off, Corey Van Dam, the Chicago Slayer, Willie Eichard, Luis Hercules Hernandez, Killshot, Keith Hart, Kind of a Big Deal, Corey Blake, Max the Axe Velado, Angelo Big Boy Bellata, Poison Pill, Lindsay Manns, Tony Payday Packham, The Black Bear, Julian Bell, Gabriel, the San Diego Beer Snob Solus, The Demon of the Prairie, Scott Silver, the DC Slayer Marcus Cross, Armed and Dangerous Adam Gray, Matt, Slap My Patoot Silly Scala, these names are just completely ridiculous, The Renton Road Warrior, Taylor Schatt, the Ambassador of Disaster, Chase Wood, who's a first-time donator, so thank you to Chase. World Wonder, Wesley Fox. Now get this. Wesley would like to give a shout-out to another one of our listeners, another one of our donators. You guys know the Marietta Mahler, right? Alexandru Mata, you've heard his name mentioned on the show before. He wants to give a shout-out to Alexandru. The two of them went to the same university, and they lived one hallway down from each other in their apartment complex. He had no idea until recently that Alexandru listened to this show until he heard his donation shout out. And he said, hey, I went to school with that guy. They live in different states now, apparently. I'm not sure how often they keep in touch. But that's crazy. That's a crazy story. I love hearing stuff like that. And last but not least here, shout out to the Irish Wolf, Simon Peter Munoz. That comes from Genie. Two fine people I'm very happy to call friends. I hope you had a great birthday. I'm very sorry I had to miss the party, but missing out on a lot of things right now with everything going on. But hopefully I will see you guys soon. The New Orleans meetup. A lot of you have been asking me about that. What's the plan? The plan is this. The meetup is going to be taking place on Sunday, April 8th. That's WrestleMania Sunday, beginning at 11 a.m. local time, at Pat O'Brien's. Pat O'Brien's Courtyard Restaurant on Bourbon Street in New Orleans. The Facebook invite is up. I created an event invite on the fan page. I'll share it in the group and on Twitter and elsewhere. I would encourage anybody who's either going or thinking they might be interested in going, if you're going to be in New Orleans, if you live in New Orleans, just RSVP on the invite. It's not mandatory, but I'd like to get a sense of how many people might be there, try to get a head count. So you can find the invite right now on Facebook. I will share it. But that is the date, Sunday, April 8th. So if you're going to WrestleMania, you can hit the meetup first. Superdome is only about a little over a mile away. I mapped it out. It's about 1.3 miles away, I think, from where we're going to be doing our meetup on Bourbon Street. So that's a 10-minute or less car ride if you're taking a taxi over. So it's very easy. Go to the meetup, and then straight from the meetup, you can head on over to the Superdome if you're going to WrestleMania. And if not, hey, just hang out on Bourbon Street. You're going to have plenty of places to go to. You're going to have a good time. So anyway, hopefully I'll see a lot of you guys there. Elimination Chamber, that was last weekend. My full review is up on the YouTube channel. I got it up later that night as a sound-off extra. That video now has over 210,000 views, which makes it the second most viewed video ever on our channel, behind only my Royal Rumble review from a month earlier. So we're setting all kinds of records here so far in 2018. We're barely 2 months into the year here. So that's pretty cool. So you want my full thoughts over half an hour, that's up on the YouTube channel. The two chamber matches and the Ronda Rousey contract signing, I thought delivered exactly what they had to. Everything else was pretty meh. Thought everything else was basically in that category. 4,300 votes in our Twitter poll. 44% thumbs up, 56% thumbs down. So the show was underwater. You guys, by and large, did not like Elimination Chamber. I wasn't as offended by the show, I guess, as some of you were. We had Roman Reigns winning the Men's Chamber and Alexa Bliss winning the Women's Chamber. They were the obvious picks, I thought, going... I mean, everybody knew about Roman, but... I thought Alexa was the obvious pick going in, so I wasn't surprised by any of this. And I thought the Women's Chamber match was better than the men's. I thought it was just a better match. I thought they told a better story. I like what they did with Sasha and Bayley in that match, and Alexa doing everything in her power to crawl away, and I just enjoyed it more. I mean, the men's match was longer. There were a lot more finishers to kick out of in that match. But I just thought the women, you know, just did a better job with it. Let's talk about Rey Mysterio here. This was according... Now this whole thing is very weird, because this report kind of came out of nowhere. And given some developments over the last 12 hours or so, maybe a little more, things may have changed again. But anyway, Justin Barrasso is the reporter over at Sports Illustrated. And he comes out with a lot of reports about WWE stuff, and it's not exactly gospel when we see these reports. I would still take what you see on SI with a grain of salt. But he came out with a report claiming that Rey Mysterio is not only in talks with WWE, which I totally believe, for a return, because his Royal Rumble cameo last month, in January, got over so well. I don't know that anybody expected Mysterio to come out to get the kind of reaction that he did. We really shouldn't be surprised if you think about it, because Mysterio's been a big name for a long time. He's been away for a while. Absence makes the heart grow fonder. He looked great. I thought he looked tremendous for the time he was in there. But his reaction blew away everybody's expectations, and that got people thinking, hey, we might be able to bring this guy back in and do something with him. So according to this story, they are in talks, and they're very serious. They're very close to a deal. And the plan is, or was, for Rey to wrestle John Cena at WrestleMania after it was ruled that The Undertaker would not be working or not be able to work this year's show. I do believe that Rey Mysterio will end up coming back on a part-time schedule to WWE. I do believe that. Triple H is apparently the one handling the negotiations. I think a deal will be made. As far as wrestling John Cena at WrestleMania, this, my friends, is what you call a red herring. It is not happening. It wasn't happening before Ray supposedly got hurt last night, and it's certainly not looking like it's going to happen now. Last night, Rey Mysterio was wrestling a tag team match at an event for Northeast Wrestling. He was teaming up with Flip Gordon against Caleb Conley and Joey Mercury. And apparently, he may have torn his bicep in that match last night. Rey hurt his arm. He did finish the match. He did the 619, a poor-looking 619, but he hit the 619. He hit the big splash off the top, got the win. But he clearly hurt his arm. He was telling people backstage he thought he tore his bicep. He knows his body better than anyone. I mean, Rey Mysterio has had his share of injuries over the years, so I think if he thinks he tore something, he probably did. And if he did, that's an injury that, I mean, it depends if it needs surgery or not. That's an injury that could keep you on the shelf for many, many months. So the timing absolutely sucks for Rey Mysterio, because remember, he's scheduled to wrestle Jushin Thunder Liger March 25th on that New Japan show in Long Beach. So forget WrestleMania, that match all of a sudden is in grave jeopardy. Unless the injury either isn't as serious as he thinks it is, or if he's one of these guys who just wants to tape it up. You know, WWE wouldn't allow him to do that, but with New Japan, who knows? Maybe Ray feels obligated. He just says, look, I'm going to tape it up and I'm going to do the match no matter what. That's something that Tanahashi would do, you know, in New Japan. So maybe the match will still happen regardless, but the timing of this, whatever the injury is, absolutely sucks. And look, the match at WrestleMania, I have no doubt, is John Cena and The Undertaker. They would not tease it the way they did on Monday if that match was not happening. It got a huge reaction, too, from the crowd in Anaheim last Monday. I mean, I don't want to see it, but there are plenty of people, obviously, who do. And it is a marquee match because it is two of the biggest names in the history of the company. I'm not trying to downplay the fact that it would be a big match. It's not a match I care to see, but there are people who would like to see it. That's the match. Everything else is just noise. Cena going to SmackDown to challenge for the WWE title. It's all noise. And if they're doing Cena Undertaker, since there's no streak on the line, which was the time that they should have done the match, but what's done is done, then I think they should make it a career-ending match. Now, I had one of our listeners, Glenn, write into me, asking me, you know, he wasn't sold on the idea of a career match. He thought, well, wouldn't it be better if it was like an I Quit match? Because here you have two guys who are not known for ever saying the words I quit. Undertaker, maybe once in his career when he was a heel, maybe uttered the words, but Undertaker is not a guy that you associate with saying the words I quit. And John Cena, it's part of his gimmick that he never says the words I quit. So it would be kind of interesting, I suppose, if you put the two of them in a position where one of them would have no choice. Although knowing them, they would just do a finish where somebody passes out or something like that. But I don't think that's the way to go. I think a career-ending match, if you're going to do it, career versus career. Both guys put their careers on the line, because that's certainly the direction they've been going in. It seems like with John Cena lately, all these losses, he's second-guessing himself. Everybody knows he's getting older. He's wrestling less and less. It's at least plausible to some people that maybe John Cena would lose. But you make it a career-ending match with the loser being forced once and for all to retire. That at least would up the stakes and make things quasi-interesting. But I'm still holding out hope for Samoa Joe, that he might be able to make it back in the next few weeks and they could do Joe versus Cena. Of the three opponents that have been rumored for John Cena at different points, Undertaker, Samoa Joe before he got hurt, Rey Mysterio, which I didn't buy into the moment I read that. Of those three, Samoa Joe is the one that I would like to see against Cena in New Orleans. To me, that's the most interesting match or the most compelling match. So I'm hoping, fingers crossed, that Joe can make it back in time. Raw last Monday was in Anaheim. The key matches for WrestleMania all seem pretty much set. Roman Reigns against Brock Lesnar for the Universal title in lieu of Roman's win at the Chamber. AJ Styles against Shinsuke Nakamura for the WWE Championship. John Cena against The Undertaker. And Kurt Angle teaming with Ronda Rousey, most likely, against Triple H and Stephanie McMahon. The Roman Reigns promo on Monday night was the hot topic coming out of that show. They sent Roman out there to do a work shoot on Brock Lesnar, right down to him saying that he was probably going to get his ass chewed out backstage by the powers that be for speaking his mind, speaking freely on Lesnar on TV as if. He talked about how Brock was supposed to be there, but he no-showed. He doesn't care about you people. You know, I tweeted after Monday's show how surprised that I was genuinely surprised by how many people actually thought Brock Lesnar just randomly snapped a photo with Dana White on Sunday that Dana posted, by the way, during the Chamber pay-per-view. He just, you know, he randomly took that photo with Dana White, and then he just legitimately no-showed. He breached his contract, no less, by no-showing Raw last Monday night. I think it's great. I think, hey, kayfabe has a pulse. It's not dead yet. Every time it flatlines, you can always find a pair of paddles to shock some life back into it. I think that's great. I knew what they were doing the night they did it. And I think it's the second smartest thing the WWE could try. The smartest move would be to just replace Reigns with Seth Rollins or Braun Strowman, the two baby faces that people actually cheer for and get behind and I think want to see win the championship or go for the championship. And that has more to do, I think, with just how over and successful at the moment Strowman and Rollins are, and not me just like hating on Reigns. In an ideal situation, you would put a guy in there who the fans genuinely want to see go in there and beat Brock to win the championship. I don't think Roman Reigns is that guy. So the smartest thing would be to make a change. Obviously, they're not going to make a change. Unless they're forced to, which I'll get to in a second. So they've made their choice. They insist on anointing Reigns. They're going to play the part-timer card on Brock Lesnar. And I think, given the situation, it's the smartest move for them to make. I'm not saying it's going to work, but I think it's the smartest play for them at the moment. Now, really, if you listen to what Roman said on Monday night in that promo, it's just a rehash of the same promo, more or less, that Reigns cut on John Cena 6 months ago. You got on your big old bus. You just did it for the money. I'm the one making all the towns. I'm the one making all the shots. I mean, right down to him calling Lesnar a bitch, right? Didn't he call John Cena a bitch? They sure do love having Roman Reigns go on TV and call people a bitch. I mean, look, it's an easy pop, I guess. I don't think it's going to do much to get him cheered inside the Superdome. But I don't think they could do anything at this point to get this guy cheered the way they want him to be inside that building. I thought the promo was good. I thought his delivery was better than usual. He seemed, as he went along, to have a certain fire in his voice where he was actually, for a moment there, coming across as genuine and not coming across, as a lot of these guys do, and Roman does, as the talking robot, you know, trying to remember his lines. They, you know, wanted to make this as authentic as possible, and I like that. I'd like to actually see them do more of that. But it is a promo that we've already heard before. Now, Brock, you'll be happy to know, beat Kane last night at a house show in Chicago in 35 seconds with two German suplexes and a terrible looking F5. If you see the footage online, because somebody already leaked the footage, I know this because somebody uploaded the match, I watched it. It took me longer to microwave my TV dinner the other night than it did for Brock Lesnar to beat Kane. But if you watch it, it's like he throws Kane off his shoulders. Kane actually lands on his feet and puts his hands down to break his fall, as if he's falling from a great height. I'm like, come on. I mean, I know it's a house show, and you're not going to replay different television angles to show different angles of the move. It's like, put some effort into it. I almost wonder if this is being done on purpose. Maybe Brock is just going to go out there, and I don't give a shit. I'm literally just here to collect a paycheck. And now they're actually going to incorporate it into his gimmick. We'll see. I guess the next time he's on TV, we'll see. But he certainly wasn't giving maximum effort here in this match. It's time to get the belt off Brock. I mean, I think we're all pretty much... I think most of us, I can't say all, most of us, I think, are pretty much in agreement on this. There are people who wanted to fight me in the past when I've argued that Brock is still valuable and they should re-sign him and keep him around. There are people who just want him gone. They see no value left in him. They think he just sucks the life out of the show. He's never around. It's not worth the investment. You can make that argument. I still like having him around. I just think that, you know, even if it's only a few times a year, and yeah, he only does it for the money, but there's still a legitimacy about him and a genuineness when he and Heyman come out together that still, to this day, nobody else on that roster has. Even Rousey, who comes from a legitimate sports background, right? She's supposed to be this kind of badass. She has that same type of aura, but it's not the same as Lesnar. So even after how many years has Lesnar been back now? 5 years? 6 years? There's still nobody else who quite gives off that same vibe that he does when he comes out and he bounces around and, you know, comes down to the ring. And I think there's value in keeping somebody like that around. I think there's value in Brock staying, if for no other reason, to work a match with Bobby Lashley and put Lashley over on his way out. If this is going to be it for Brock and he's going to leave later in the year, then, you know, at least do something with him and Lashley. Lashley is rumored to be coming in very soon. I would guess the night after WrestleMania is when we see him make his return. And, you know, I can just see it now. You know, Brock loses the championship. It would be kind of nice, wouldn't it, if Brock and Heyman came out on TV the next night and actually showed an interest in wanting to get that belt back? Wouldn't that be? For the Universal title, that's something we haven't seen from anybody who's held that championship yet. There's been, what, 4 or 5 different Universal champions? Not one person has gotten a rematch. Not one person ever really seemed to care much about getting a rematch. It would be kind of nice if Brock came out on TV the next night all full of piss and vinegar, just wanting his belt back the way he did after WrestleMania 31. He came out the next night. This was after Rollins cashed in. Brock's face was all cut up. That was actually fantastic what they did with him that night, because they were going to do the rematch, Lesnar against Rollins, and Rollins ran away. But that whole segment was great. And then Rollins ran away. Brock gave Michael Cole an F5. His shoe went flying. Brock beat up the fake cameraman. Like, that's the Brock Lesnar I want to see. So I can almost picture it. He comes out on Raw the next night. He's angry. He's pissed off. Heyman wants, you know, he wants to cash in on his client's rematch, and then out comes Bobby Lashley. And so the championship is sort of forgotten about, and now you have this issue with Lesnar and Lashley, which I think could be a big match that you do. I don't know if they could hold off until SummerSlam, but you can certainly do it on, you know, one of the pay-per-views in the spring. You know, maybe even the Money in the Bank show or something, but I think there's value at least in keeping Brock around for that. I am not an advocate of him losing at Mania and then just disappearing. There's still value that you can get out of him putting somebody else over. Apparently, Braun Strowman is the backup for Roman Reigns for WrestleMania in the event they have to pull Roman from the match for any reason, like this whole Richard Rodriguez would-be steroid scandal. That guy John Bravo, who's been putting the videos together online, teasing that Roman bought, you know, certain drugs and certain items from this man. They're gonna, we have evidence, we have emails, we have documentation. We still have yet to see any of this. He claims that he's putting the finishing touches on a video, outing what substances Reigns purchased, and there's going to be proof and receipts. Hey, I welcome it. If he's got something to show, then show it. And then everybody can determine if what's there is a big deal or if it's much ado about nothing. It's all of this kind of teasing and leaving this guy twisting in the wind that I just don't like. You know, and who is this really? Some guy on YouTube putting videos together. And, you know, teasing it and teasing. It's been weeks now of all these teases. And it's like I said before, show your cards or shut your mouth. I'm sick of hearing about this story already. Show me something. Still don't think that there's any chance Roman gets pulled from this match, but hey, if he's got a smoking gun, show it. Show it and just be done with it or go away. But Strowman being used as a backup, so whatever plans they had for him and Miz was rumored for the Intercontinental Championship, that's obviously not happening now. To just sort of keep Strowman on standby in the unlikely event that Roman were to get pulled from that main event, I don't know, to me that's like slap in the face. For the kind of year this guy has had, he's arguably, if not the biggest, one of the top two biggest babyfaces in the entire company. Or at least on the Raw brand, and you're going into your biggest show of the year and this guy doesn't even have a match? He's on standby? And if somebody says, oh, well, there's Kane, why not Kane? Don't ever talk to me again if you're going to make that suggestion. I don't want to talk to you. I don't want to hear that suggestion. Especially not after what I just saw with Kane and Lesnar last night. The somber John Cena stuff where he's all dejected, I've got no path to WrestleMania, it's every bit as ridiculous to me as Shawn Michaels losing all of his money on bad investments and having to be JBL's slave. Absolutely nobody in the world believes that John Cena won't be in a major match at WrestleMania, except for John Cena. He's apparently the only one. So he teased issuing a WrestleMania challenge on the show Monday night to The Undertaker. Place went nuts. And then he said he was told the match is not happening because it's not possible. He didn't explain what that meant. He said it's not possible. And then he moved on. He said, well, I've only got one option left. I'm going to go to SmackDown. I'm going to go to SmackDown tomorrow night and try to make something happen. And I'll talk about SmackDown in a little bit. They had a six-woman tag on Monday night with Bayley, Sasha Banks, and Asuka against Alexa Bliss, Nia Jax, and Mickie James. Bayley pulled a Sid Justice on Saturday night's main event, hopped down off the apron just as Sasha reached for the tag like Hulk Hogan did, only Bayley didn't threaten to punch Brutus Beefcake and smash his face into little itty-bitty pieces. It wasn't a heel turn. What they're doing is they're going tit-for-tat back and forth. You know, the chamber, for example, every woman for herself, Sasha kicked Bayley in the face, and it drove me nuts. The announcers, oh, she stabbed her friend in the back, and again, it's like, it's not a handicap match. Like, it's every woman for herself. Sasha did exactly what I would do and exactly what any one of you would have done. But they're going tit-for-tat back and forth. Clearly, they're building more and more tension between these two. And, you know, obviously they're building to a match of WrestleMania. I can't sit here and say that if they were to turn somebody and it was Bayley, that heel Bayley would be an automatic fail. I can't say that because you never know. You never know. Look at Sami Zayn. Sami Zayn was like the best babyface in the world. You would think, why would you turn this guy heel? That's about the dumbest thing you could possibly do. They turned him heel, and this guy showed a side of himself that I didn't know he had in him. He's been entertaining as all hell. I mean, I'm sick to death of this Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, Shane McMahon, Daniel Bryan crap on SmackDown. I don't blame Sami for that. But heel Sami Zayn has been a breath of fresh air, so you never know what somebody has deep within them, what they're able to pull out. I can't sit here and say that Bayley wouldn't be a great heel. Who's to say? Until we have a chance to see her, give it a shot, none of us know. I know Bayley has said in interviews that she's been itching for the chance to go heel. I think she might have said that to Stone Cold on his podcast once. I just think of the two of them, it would be a if you're going to turn anybody, it would be a mistake not to turn Sasha. Like, some people were just born to be the bad guy. Shawn Michaels, as great of a babyface as he was in that second half of his career, the man was born to be a heel. Ric Flair, great of a babyface as he could be, and I think he would agree on this, was born to be a heel. Sasha Banks, I think, was born to be a heel. It's just something naturally hateable when she's out there saying the things she's saying and doing the things she's doing. The whole boss character is not a babyface. The boss, Sasha Banks, that's an inherently heel character. And so what I'd like to see is not only for her to be the one to turn, honestly, coming out of WrestleMania, what I would like to see is a feud between a heel Sasha and Becky Lynch. Whether that involves Sasha going to SmackDown or Becky coming to Raw. If it were me, I would send Becky to Raw. Whatever, if they do like a shakeup or something, I would shake up Becky from SmackDown all the way over to Raw. I think a change of scenery for her and a change of opponents would do her a lot of good. But anyway, we're getting the rematch tomorrow night between Asuka and Nia Jax, the rematch from Elimination Chamber, which Asuka won. I'm sticking to my guns that it's going to be Charlotte Asuka at WrestleMania. It's going to be Nia and Alexa. I've been saying this for over a month now. My mind has not changed. They've done absolutely nothing on television to you know, convince me or fool me into thinking that it's going to be anything but those two matches, because those two matches are the two matches that, the way they've been building things up, make the most sense. And now, all of a sudden, on social media, whereas before they weren't drawing any attention to it, now they're like, hey, don't forget, Asuka still hasn't told us which champion she wants to challenge at WrestleMania. Oh, really? If you watch Raw the last 2 or 3 weeks, you would think the decision was already made for her. Now they're suddenly acknowledging, well, she hasn't made her decision yet. So, of course, they want to lull you into a false sense of security, make you think that it's going to be Alexa Bliss. Alexa Bliss is on TV last Monday after the pay-per-view running her mouth about her friend Nia, how Nia really is the one who deserves to be the champion, or not to be the champion, but to be in the championship match. It's very obvious where this is all going. This is all going to blow up in Alexa's face. I think she'll drop the title to Nia at WrestleMania, and I think the money match is going to be Charlotte and Asuka. That's the match that people want to see, I think. I think that's the best match to do, the biggest, you know, women's match, championship match they could do. And those are going to be the matches. It is still the most obvious path for them to take. And it's not something that I've just come up with in a week or two. I've been saying this for 4 or 5 weeks now. Now, where that leaves Carmella is that if Asuka does go to SmackDown, she better try to cash in before WrestleMania. That's what that means for Carmella. Or, and I don't know that we've seen this before. I don't think we have. maybe it's a situation where we have a current Money in the Bank contract holder who switches brands, or they get drafted to another show and they take the briefcase with them. As far as I know, they haven't talked about there being any rules against that. It's not a SmackDown exclusive briefcase. I mean, you may only be able to cash in on whatever, you know, brand you're on, that only on that champion, but if you switch, if you get drafted to another brand, I don't see why the briefcase wouldn't come right along with you as a package deal. And if that's the case, they could send Carmella to Raw, and she might have a better chance of successfully cashing in there than she would against Asuka on SmackDown. Because remember, she has until, what, June? I think it's June would be a year. So she still has a few months. She doesn't have to cash in at WrestleMania or before WrestleMania, but if Asuka wins the title, it ain't looking too good for Carmella. Now, Miz on this show Monday night lost two straight non-title matches back-to-back. He lost to Seth Rollins, and then he lost to Finn Balor. And so that likely means a three-way at WrestleMania. I like that match. I don't think you have to add anybody else, just those three for the Intercontinental Championship. And I always smile when I hear that the IC title is even going to be defended at WrestleMania, because I still remember that period from years and years ago. There were like seven or eight straight WrestleMania shows where there wasn't one single defense of the Intercontinental title. Six, seven, 8 years in a row, something crazy like that. And you know, in the last few years, we've gotten a whole bunch of title defenses. I think it might have started with Cody against Big Show, I think, in Miami, might have been the first one in a very long time. A couple of them have ended up on the pre-show, whatever, but I smile when I at least know that belt is being defended, because I remember when it was a complete and total afterthought. And so say what you want to about the secondary belts right now in WWE, but believe me, they're in a lot better shape than they would have been even 5 or 6 years ago, believe me. Sheamus and Cesaro, after beating Titus Worldwide at the Elimination Chamber the night before, came out on this show Monday night and pinned Titus and Apollo in two straight falls to win a 2 out of 3 falls match. With the first fall lasting a whopping 10 seconds. I think got brogue kicked, I think it was Titus, and got pinned in 10 seconds. That's 3 straight pinfall wins over Titus and Apollo in just 24 hours. Filler! What did I say? Filler. That's all these guys were ever meant to be. I said it going into the pay-per-view. I'm saying it again now. Filler for the bar heading into WrestleMania. I did not expect them to bury Titus and Apollo the way they did, though. I don't use that word very often. I don't see how you can use any other word in this situation unless it's leading to Apollo, like, turning on Titus and just, you know, breaking away from him. At least then it serves a purpose. You know, Apollo doesn't want to be associated with this loser and, you know, blah, 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 whatever. Otherwise, how can you call it anything else but a burial? I mean, my God, three pinfall losses back to back to back in 24 hours. I don't know what else you would call that. It was impressive. The lengths in which they went to make absolutely certain that you knew these guys were not to be taken seriously. Triple H and Stephanie wanted an apology from Kurt Angle for sabotaging their return segment. The Ronda Rousey debut segment, I should say, at the Elimination Chamber the night before. It ended with Rousey suplexing Triple H through a table. Ronda came out. She had her trademark Rousey death stare that, if anybody watched any of her fights, you remember when she would come out to the cage. She had that look like she was about to murder 15 people. She had that look on her face. Marched down to the ring. Angle stopped her. Kurt Angle admitted that he lied the night before. He said, "I need this job." And he apologized for saying the things he said about Triple H and Stephanie McMahon. Wow. Wow. Hopefully this leads somehow to Kurt admitting he lied about lying and actually told the truth, which already sounds way too convoluted. Otherwise, what an utterly stupid thing to have him say. What is he, destitute? I mentioned Shawn Michaels before, but remember all the bad investments and he had to be JBL slave? Are we headed for the same thing with Kurt Angle here? Is he going to have to be the McMahon slave? I would argue he already comes across that way on TV. But is that the story they're going for here? This guy's destitute? He's got 5 kids and a wife to support. He has no money? I need this job? Really? Why? So then to add insult to injury, Triple H, on his way out of the ring, sucker punches Kurt Angle in the shoulder. I don't think it was meant to be in the shoulder, but it was the worst looking punch I've seen since whatever John Cena's last match was. Ronda just stood there staring at Kurt, tried to help him up to his feet as the show came to a close. Kurt Angle practically begging for his job. He was all but on his hands and knees. Not a good look for someone who's supposed to be this decorated champion, this Olympic gold medalist. I don't know what they're trying to accomplish by going with that as part of the story here. Hopefully we'll get a better sense of it tomorrow night. But so far as what they've done with Kurt, what they did with Kurt on Monday, I don't like that. They're making Kurt out to look like a goofball, and I don't like that. Ronda, though, you know, she sounded more comfortable on the mic than she did the night before. I still think she would benefit from having a mouthpiece, whether it's Heyman or somebody else. And I don't, you know, again, I don't mean like Nakamura has a literal mouthpiece in his mouth. A manager, an agent, call him whatever you want. Rousey is already, in my view, paying dividends for WWE. Aside from the SportsCenter coverage, all the media coverage, you know, that nothing turns on WWE more than media coverage. So they're getting their money's worth from that alone from Rousey already, but put that on the side. Besides being a key factor in any potential interest from another TV partner like Fox, I'm going to talk about Fox here in a second. Aside from that, which is a big enough deal, there was a report this weekend in the Melbourne Herald Sun newspaper down in Australia that it is all but a done deal that WWE will be running a show, a pay-per-view, this October, possibly on my birthday, October 6th, at the MCG, which is the Melbourne Cricket Ground, which apparently can fit up to 100,000 people for certain shows. It is a big stadium. And the story mentions that Ronda Rousey will either be the headline attraction on that show or one of the headline attractions on that show. That was one of the things that was most appealing to putting this deal together, if in fact the deal is done, was them getting a big name like Rousey, who actually has fought in Australia before, and is a big name still, big mainstream sports celebrity, and that she may have been a key in getting this deal done. So her signing with WWE, no matter what you think about her, her mic skills, why they bring her in, she's washed up. If you're not a Rousey fan, if you're not a fan of them bringing her in, you're not seeing the big picture here, because her signing is already netting a lot of interest from outside parties who want to do business with WWE. If on top of that, she turns out to be even a capable professional wrestler, or even a good one, and time will tell, but imagine if on top of all this stuff, she actually turns out to be pretty good. This could go down as one of the all-time great signings in the company's history when all is said and done. I mean, bold claim, given that she's only made two appearances so far and she has yet to wrestle a single match, but I think it's already paying off for them. And I also love the idea of them doing a random stadium show like that and just making it like a network special. I really enjoyed like the Beast in the East special they did a few years ago in Japan. Now that was a much smaller venue than this one. I mean, this is going to be quite the undertaking here if they want to get even anywhere close to 100,000 people in that stadium, but it takes them out of their element. This is not something that they normally do. Plus, I mean, how often does WWE broadcast anything live from locations like Japan or Australia? Not very often. Australia can't even get a WWE pay-per-view. The UK can't even get a WWE pay-per-view. How do you think they feel about that? The fact they would do any kind of pay-per-view or network special, or I guess every pay-per-view now is a network special, but the fact they would do anything like this from Australia, let alone at a big venue like that, that's pretty cool. And it's long overdue. And I've already seen comments online from some people who live down there. And I know we have a lot of Australian listeners here of this show, so I'd love to hear from you guys. But I've seen comments on Twitter and certain websites saying that, you know, there's not a chance in hell they're going to get anywhere close to 100,000 people in that stadium for a big pay-per-view. Like a SummerSlam or even a WrestleMania, let alone a random show like this. Look, even if they get half that, if they get 50, 60,000 people in that stadium, that's still a lot of people. But if you do live down that way, let me know if you've been to that, you know, the MCG before, if you live in Melbourne or anywhere down in Australia. I don't know if there's a certain sports team that's sort of native to that stadium that runs there, what other types of events other than cricket that might run there. But I'd love to hear from you guys if you think that this company is in for a rude awakening as far as attendance is concerned, or if you think they have a legitimate shot at filling that stadium with anywhere close to 100,000 people. And to Rick, by the way, Rick is another one of our listeners who wrote in this week. He asked me if Emma should return to WWE later this year for this event, if it happens. He wanted to know, you know, what my response to that would be. My response is no. Fuck them. They didn't want her. They saw no value in her. They let her go. Why should she go back now? What's changed? She hasn't been gone that long. You know, guys like Drew McIntyre, they went away for a few years and really built their name up and then eventually came back. She hasn't been gone that long. Why would she go back now? Nothing has changed. So I say the hell with him. Let her go do her thing. She'll mean a lot more to Ring of Honor doing the Women of Honor stuff that she's doing now. She's in that tournament there. She'll mean a lot more to them and helping to build up that division than anything that she would do for WWE. Now let's turn to SmackDown here. We had just shy of 2,000 votes in our SmackDown poll. 48% thumbs up, 52% thumbs down. So again, sub 50% for SmackDown. Not good. But I want to talk about the Fox story, which kind of ties into SmackDown because of some people who were at SmackDown on Tuesday night. The Fox pursuit of WWE and their television rights appears to be heating up, even though they can't technically negotiate with them until the spring, but haha. They have other ways of quote-unquote negotiating. But there's a story in the Sporting News. I want to read some of it here. Because this is really, I mean, this was something that was first reported in, I think it was probably The Observer, maybe about a month or two ago, and a few other outlets like TV websites, but now it's, I mean, this is becoming a big, big story, potentially a massive story here. So according to this article here, Fox Sports is preparing to make a major push to take WWE TV rights away from USA Network. And the little carrot that they're dangling here is the chance to air Monday Night Raw on the Fox Network. So not a cable channel, on the Fox Broadcast Network. And SmackDown Live would go to FS1, which is on cable. But SmackDown would go to FS1. Raw would be on network television. And that's a very appealing option there for WWE. The closest, I mean, they had SmackDown on UPN many years ago. UPN was never a network that was, I would say, widely distributed. I mean, SmackDown, especially at the beginning there in 99, 2000, SmackDown did killer numbers. But it never quite matched Raw. And you would think that if SmackDown was on network television that they should blow Raw out of the water. And it never really happened that way. Because UPN was never on the same level as a Fox or an NBC or an ABC. So for them to get Raw, their flagship show on a network like Fox, would be a huge deal. Now, they had a WWE spokeswoman give a quote here in the article. She obviously is not going to say anything about any of this, anything of substance. She did say that they're going to make a decision about their new TV partner sometime between May and September of this year. Their contract with USA does not expire until September of next year. So if they do go with Fox or any other partner other than USA, it's kind of like we're right back to the year 2000 again, if you remember that. Or even 2005, this awkward period where they're on another network, whether it was USA or in 2005 it was TNN. But you've got this lame duck period where you're on another network, but you're no longer partners with them. Like, people know you're moving 6 months or a year from now. So that could make for a very awkward year, I would think, for WWE if they were going to leave USA. Because they're not going anywhere until the fall of next year. I think some people think it's going to happen this year. It's not going to happen this year. The big question, according to the article here, what happens to Fox's TV deal with UFC? That deal expires at the very end of this year. If WWE is interested and wants to take an offer that Fox makes them, the belief is that they would ditch UFC altogether. Not necessarily run both on their networks. They would rather have WWE than have UFC. With WWE, you have more programming that consistently does ratings, you know, in that 3 million or so range. UFC doesn't do that. And there's tons, I mean, my God, I mean, with WWE, think of all the content that they're producing. They would have no problem, like on an FS1 or an FS2 or something, filling up their schedule with WWE shows. Now, both companies are seeking, they claim, up to $400 million for their TV rights. WWE got nowhere near that the last time they negotiated with USA. They got a nice deal, but it was nothing like $400 million. But they say that Fox is way more likely to dole out that kind of money to WWE than they would for UFC. And right now, Fox is paying about $120 million for UFC. The good part about WWE potentially going to Fox is Raw goes to 2 hours. That is the belief. The belief is that if they were to sign with Fox and if they were to move Raw to Fox Network, Raw would air from 8 to 10 p.m. every Monday night because they have a lot of local... I don't know about every market, but I think a majority of the Fox markets and affiliates across the country have a newscast at 10 p.m. We have one here in New York. Fox 5 News at 10. They're not going to bump the newscast, so Raw would have to end at 10, so it wouldn't be 3 hours anymore. There probably wouldn't even be an overrun. That's a good thing. That's a good thing. Also, the fact that they probably would have a lot more money coming in from TV rights. If they make that deal with Fox, they're going to get a shitload of money. And so if they can somehow negotiate themselves into a $300 or $400 million TV rights deal, then you know what? Vince McMahon, he proves everybody that he's a genius after all. If he can swing a deal that brings in an extra couple of $100 million a year for his company because of all this excess TV programming they're producing that, you know, we're not exactly, you know, I don't know a lot of people who are advocates for more. If anything, like, I'm a believer in less is more. I'm not saying they should have one show per week, but they overdo it. Everything has to be supersized 3, 4, 5, 6 hours, and we need more shows. And, you know, Vince once joked that in investors, one of those investor calls, that their goal one day was to have at least one show, one night of programming for all 7 nights of the week, Sunday through Saturday. We're just about there. We may already be there. There may be shows I don't even know about, for all I know. I mean, we know they have Raw. We know they have SmackDown on Tuesdays, NXT on Wednesdays. The mixed match thing is on Tuesdays as well, but I don't think they have anything Thursday. But, you know, give them time. They will. That's their goal. World domination. They want programming every night of the week. And, you know, as a longtime fan, you want to try to keep up with everything, but you can't. There's only so many hours in the day, so I'm like, oh my God, less is more. But hey, if Vince can work his way into a deal that brings him that kind of money in, then hey, the guy's a genius. What can I say? The bad part, though, about WWE getting into bed with Fox is that we would have to tolerate people like Colin Cowherd showing up to WWE events pretending to actually give a shit about pro wrestling. Cowherd is the deplorable fool who talked smack about Eddie Guerrero after he died, how he couldn't understand why is this guy's death worthy of a newspaper mention? He should be in the obituary section. There's nothing newsworthy about Eddie Guerrero dying. He died of steroids. Of course, he knows nothing about Eddie or wrestling, and nobody is going to, I think, deny that that probably played a role in Eddie's death, but the way he was going on about, oh, he's just a steroid death. He's just a wrestler. He couldn't understand for the life of him why newspapers in some markets were actually running a mention of it as though this guy were a celebrity or a real athlete. He couldn't understand it. Who cares about Eddie Guerrero? I'm paraphrasing here, but that's basically what the guy said. And now he made similar comments after Warrior died about, you know, steroid connection and whatnot, but the Eddie comments were just completely disgusting. And let us not forget the tweet that this guy sent out after WrestleMania in Dallas a few years back about the 90,000 booger eaters in attendance at the show, right? But there he was. There he was, arm in arm, posing for photos with Charlotte and Natalya backstage at SmackDown on Tuesday night. All smiles. And there he was in the front row with Eric Shanks, the head of Fox Sports, and one of their top producers, all three of them sitting there, all smiles. I mean, like I said, they can't technically negotiate with WWE until the spring, but it's obvious, you know, I mean, it's obvious why those guys were there on Tuesday. The negotiations have already begun, just not in any official capacity. But the full court press has already begun. But just to see Cowherd there, and then on his show, he's praising what a wonderful show it was, and how great the crowd was, and how excited they were. You know, I would like to think that whatever he says or whatever he does on his show is all shtick. It's all part of this guy's shtick, which doesn't make him any less of an asshole. He absolutely is. But I'd like to think, you know what? He's not really a jerk off in real life. He's not really a terrible human being off air in real life. Doesn't, because look, you could be a certain way and play up a character or a shtick on your radio show, TV show, whatever, and it's all just part of the act, and you're actually a really nice guy and a perfectly fine, acceptable human being off air. I'd like to think that's the case with this guy. I get the sense, though, he is who he is. And he's not somebody that I really have any interest in seeing more of on WWE television, and, you know, WWE sending people to his show, and I don't know. I just find the whole thing, I find him disgusting, so I find the whole thing disgusting. That's one of the big negatives of any potential deal with Fox. But all of this comes as a report from the website TV by the Numbers came out claiming that Raw and SmackDown may get a cut in the length of its commercial breaks starting this fall. Said that shows across all of NBC Universal's channels, including NBC, USA, and Sci-Fi, will feature about 20% fewer ads next season, along with a 10% reduction to commercial time. So instead of 5 30-second ads during a commercial break, viewers might see 2 or 3 larger ads. The report says that a 10% reduction of commercial time could lead to anywhere from 2 to 4 whole minutes added to the length of an episode of actual content, not ad time. And this is reportedly going to be rolled out in the fall. Hey, I welcome any change in the length or number of commercials that air. The commercials on these shows, on most weeks, are absolutely insane. And the placement of the commercials, and I don't know how much control WWE has over it, so I don't want to just start blaming Vince McMahon or Kevin Dunn or whoever. It could just very well be a USA thing, but the number of ads, when the ads, like 30 seconds into a championship match, let's go to an ad break. Then they do another ad, and then it's like another 2 or 3. It takes you out of the rhythm of the match. I wish they would at least find a, somehow, you know, find a better way to lay them out. But you can't stand those ad breaks. So to me, any reduction in the number of ads gets a thumbs up from me. I'm A-okay with that. As far as the rest of SmackDown, the Usos in the New Day segment, they had a face-to-face promo in the ring. I thought that thing was just fantastic. It was lit, right, as all the cool kids say. That's quite the streak that the Usos are running there. 9 years in the company, not a single WrestleMania, if you don't count the pre-show. If you include the pre-show, they've competed on 4 of them. And Jimmy Uso was actually part of the Andre the Giant Battle Royal at WrestleMania 31. But we're talking tag team matches. Not a single match on the main WrestleMania card in 9 years in the company. That is unbelievable. I find that just unbelievable. For a company that always tries to get as many people on the show as they can, that these guys haven't been able to get a proper WrestleMania match is insane. But they're doing the best work of their career right now. They've earned their way, finally, onto the WrestleMania card this year. I don't know what the WrestleMania match will be. I would think maybe like a 4-way. I could see Usos, New Day, Bludgeon Brothers, and probably stick Gable and Benjamin in there. Maybe a fatal 4-way elimination type match. Whatever the match is, they're going to make it onto the WrestleMania card this year. And rightfully so. Like I said, it's an appropriate time because they're going to snap that streak at a time when they're doing the best work of their career. And Big E deserves praise for his promo as well. He got all serious when he was rebutting what the Usos were saying. He talked about, you know, we hosted a WrestleMania while you guys were sitting in catering. We didn't get where we are because of who our daddies are. You know, we took our own spots. This was just really good stuff. And, you know, somebody asked me about, this was about a month or two, wasn't that long ago, in the mailbag. They asked me, you know, of the 3 members of the New Day, who do you think has the most breakout potential as a single star? And I said Big E. And I think if he drops the comedy shtick at some point, look, it's working for them now. I'm not saying do, you know, break up the New Day, but at some point, you know, he's still a relatively, I think, relatively young guy. At some point, if he drops the comedy shtick and he starts to get serious, he could easily compete, you know, IC title, US title, maybe one day even a world title. You know, the brand split makes that more likely that somebody like him could go for, whether it's the Universal title, WWE title, whatever. He has that potential. I mean, look, there's an older clip that TV Tracks posted on his channel that's out there from like 2013 of me talking about why Big E Langston could be WWE's next superstar. Now, it didn't pan out quite that way, but the potential is still there. Of the 3 of them, he's the one who would have the best shot. Josh Duhamel, of all people, made an appearance on SmackDown in a backstage comedy skit with the Fashion Police. Of all the times for him to show up with this Richard Rodriguez stuff going on, he's the one guy who actually has been outed. It showed emails and receipts and stuff for him. Not Roman Reigns, you know, but for him. But of all the times for him to make a cameo on WWE television, it happens now. I was just amused by that. He was there to promote that new Unsolved show on USA about Tupac and Biggie Smalls. I was listening to Hypnotize at the gym the other day, as a matter of fact. Just a little random observation. It is a great song. It is a great song. John Cena and AJ Styles. They had a main event here on SmackDown. If Cena wins, he would be added to the Fastlane. Was it 5-way? I've lost track of what. This match originally, I think, started out as a triple threat. Then I believe it turned into a four-way and then a five-way right the same night when Corbin and Ziggler qualified. So this would make it a six-pack challenge. Okay, I think I've got this straight now. I'm confused because everybody keeps getting added to the match. For a while there this week, I thought I was added to the match. I was getting my gear ready, and then I found out I wasn't. So if Cena wins, the stipulation was that he would be added. He would get himself a WWE Championship match at Fastlane because he's John Cena. Didn't win the Royal Rumble, didn't win the Elimination Chamber, but he's John Cena. So they have a match. I think it would be incapable. I think they would be incapable, the two of them, of having a bad match, John Cena and AJ Styles. They had another really good match, 20 minutes long. Cena won clean with an AA. Pinned him. Pinned the WWE champion right there in the middle of the ring. For a guy who's been on something of a losing streak of late to come back on, you know, to SmackDown after how many months away and pin the WWE champion clean the way he did here, you know, I would be upset, but it has to be a setup, I imagine, if these guys know how to tell a story. It's got to be a setup for Cena to be the one to take the fall at the pay-per-view in that match, have AJ pin him, to further cement his downward spiral. So to me, it's not enough just to have John Cena in a match and lose by virtue of somebody else being pinned. He's got to be the one to take the losing fall. AJ gets his win back. He beats John Cena. He retains the championship. He goes on to face Shinsuke Nakamura at WrestleMania. And John Cena now, coming out of Fastlane, is just a crumpled mess. It continues his downward spiral. He lost. He didn't lose because somebody else lost. He lost. And that's when Undertaker suddenly appears and we, you know, get the build-up to their match at WrestleMania. So I think Dolph Ziggler is the beneficiary of this, because Dolph Ziggler, he might be spared. He might be spared the indignity of being the one to take the fall. I figured he was being added to eat the fall. Now I think it's John Cena. So him beating Styles doesn't really bother me. I mean, look, it doesn't bother me that much anyway. They had a good match. You know, it doesn't kill AJ. He's John Cena. You know, he's the one guy who's pretty much Teflon and untouchable in that company. You know, he can lose, he can win. It doesn't matter. He's a big name. He's still the biggest name in that company. So, you know, I could think of worse guys for AJ Styles to be pinned by in the middle of the ring. What followed at the end of that match was the worst example yet of production malpractice on this show. I turned the show off when Baron Corbin ran out to attack John Cena after the match. I know what happened. I know, you know, Owens and Zayn came out. Dolph Ziggler eventually came out. They had to rush off the air, apparently, because there was some new show that was premiering. Actually, it might have been that show that Dumel was there to promote, was premiering at 10 p.m., and so they got the hell out of there. And so it was a big, crazy brawl, apparently, to end SmackDown. I know this because I read what happened. I didn't see it. I turned the show off when Corbin ran out. And the reason I turned the show off was, after about the 12th Zoom cut combo from the camera, I'd seen enough. Talk about overused. I mean, talk about an overused device. This was the worst example yet. I literally shouted, fuck this, and just put the poll up on Twitter. I said, I can't. I can't even see what's going on. And they love doing that shopping. They did it with the Shield. That's where it started, because it creates this illusion of chaos. You know, if the guy just starts shaking randomly, oh, it's all chaotic. It's chaos. Yeah, but I'd like to see what's going on. I'd like to see what's going on and not have to take a Dramamine before I watch this show. I've seen movies that have shaky cam effect. Movies I actually liked. But in the middle of the movie, when the shaky cam gets a little out of control, I get nauseous. I know I'm not the only one. Now, I can't tell you I've ever legitimately gotten nauseous watching one of these shows, because it doesn't last long enough, I don't think, or at least I turn away. But it's just insane. Somebody on our Facebook group counted it up. It was over 30, I think, either Zooms or cuts. I think it was camera cuts. 30 or 32, something like that. That's insane. That's absolutely insane. Speaking of insane, one more note. According to TMZ, Tammy Sitch was back in the news. She was arrested twice in 2 weeks for DUI and is currently sitting in a New Jersey jail after she failed to appear in court for either of those two cases, she was arrested on February 27th, and while they were processing her, they discovered that she was actually a fugitive of justice because her parole for her earlier offenses had been revoked back in August, which led to a bench warrant for her arrest. I've lost track of all the other things she's been arrested for. She's been arrested for far more than DUI. This is far more than just a drinking problem that this woman has. But that's a total of 5 DUIs now that she's been busted for. 3 of them came in the same year. That's 5 DUIs. If you have 5 DUIs on your record, you should never be allowed behind the wheel of a vehicle ever again. Permanent expulsion. At what point do we draw the line? You want to wait until somebody gets killed? Your license should be revoked after the 3rd time, let alone the 5th. How is somebody with 4 other DUIs in their record, let alone 5, allowed to keep driving? How is that possible? I know every state, I think, has their own laws. I don't care. This should be a uniform, universal rule across all 50 states. X number of DUIs or DWIs, whatever the case may be, 3's a nice number. So hell of a lot better than 5. That's it. You don't get a second chance after that. I mean, to me, it's one thing to be a danger to yourself. When you're a danger to others, 5 different times, enough is enough. This woman would be a lot better off if she spent a little less time calling out NXT talents for their looks and calling Candice LeRae ugly and focusing more on getting her own act together and not being a complete and total embarrassment. This week's mailbag is brought to you by Mania Crawl 5. Mania Crawl is taking place the same day and location as our meetup, the Sound Off meetup, Sunday, April 8th in New Orleans at Pat O'Brien's starting at 11 a.m. You can buy a Mania Crawl shirt at teespring.com/ManiaCrawl5. That's the number 5. Now through March 7th only. So time is running out. All proceeds go to Connor's Cure. You can also make a donation through Eventbrite, Venmo. That's at ManiaCrawl is the handle for Venmo. And PayPal, ManiaCrawl@gmail.com is the email address for PayPal. Again, all proceeds go to Connor's Cure. For the direct donations and the shirts, it's always a good time. I've been to a few Mania Crawls before. We'll be in the same spot this year. Theirs is a crawl, so obviously they're going to be hitting other bars along Bourbon Street. They'll be crawling away after a while. But it starts at Pat O'Brien, so show your support. Crack open a few cold ones with your fellow wrestling fans Sunday, April 8th, in the hours before WrestleMania. If you have questions for the mailbag, you can email me, thesolomonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from. I apologize to everybody who's been sending. I got a crush of questions this week. I haven't even looked at most of them, let alone had the chance to respond, because I've been running back and forth, you know, to the hospital. I just haven't had time. So I apologize. I will try to get to all of those, whether I respond directly or not. Try to get to all of those as soon as I possibly can. But keep sending them in, and always include your name and where you are from if you want to have a shot at getting your question here on the show. Craig, from Chicago, do you think it would be better if the main event for WrestleMania is Nakamura versus AJ instead of Brock Lesnar against Roman Reigns? We all know Roman is going to get the title, and the crowd is going to probably boo him out of the building like they did at WrestleMania 32. They're going to go with what they think is the bigger match, and they think the bigger match, obviously, is Roman Reigns against Brock Lesnar. So I don't think that AJ and Nakamura are going to headline as the final match. To me, that's the real main event. That's the match I am looking most forward to at WrestleMania, is AJ and Nakamura. So, hey, to me, it may not go on last, but to me, it's the main event. And I think if they don't put that match on last, if they put that on before, like either right before, or maybe a couple of matches before Lesnar and Reigns, I think it could end up having a negative effect. But you know what? With Roman out there, honestly, I think even if you had a match like Styles and Nakamura go on before Roman and Brock, and the crowd goes nuts for AJ and Nakamura, they love it. It's just this fantastic match that gets a monster reaction in 25, 30 minutes, a classic. You run the risk, you would think anyway, you run the risk of tiring the crowd out. It's going to be WrestleMania 18. Or WrestleMania 25 all over again. Poor Triple H, right? He's the common thread there. I don't know that that would be the case this time, because I think enough people would so vociferously boo either both men or Roman Reigns. Because, by the way, that as even though I think it's a smart move for them to try to make, right? If they're insistent that Roman's going to be in that match, they have to try something, anything, to get the people to like him a little bit more. So I don't blame them at all for going the route of trying to make Brock the bad guy who doesn't care about you and me. And, you know, Roman's a full-time guy. We should get behind Roman. They've got to at least try. I do think there's a risk that it could blow up in their face, though. There is a negative risk here for them in that it doesn't help at all to get people to cheer Roman, but it actually works a lot to get people to not like Lesnar, who I guess is supposed to be the heel anyway in this situation, I guess. But you run into a scenario here, potentially, where, I mean, I don't want to say WrestleMania 20-esque, but you could have two guys instead of just the one getting booed out of the building in New Orleans. So they have to hope that doesn't happen. So I don't think having a dead crowd is going to be an issue for those two. I think there's going to be plenty of energy. It might be negative energy, but I think there'll be plenty. But to me, you know, AJ and Nakamura is the match I'm looking forward to the most. For me, that's my main event. Is it going to go on last? No, I don't think it is. Rudy from Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. Have you seen the incident with Eddie Edwards and Sami Callihan from Impact this week and the fallout from it? If so, what did you think about it? Yeah, that was brutal. So these two guys had a match at an Impact taping back in January. So this match happened, you know, a month and a half ago maybe. And they did a spot, which aired finally on TV this week, and they aired it. They did not edit it out of the show or anything. They just showed this thing and left it the way it was. And they did a spot, where Eddie Edwards had a chair positioned in an open position. The chair was, you know, it was not folded, it was open. And the chair was placed on top of Eddie. And I guess the plan was for Sami Callihan to take a baseball bat and to strike the chair. I guess, you know, hit the chair goes into Eddie, it hurts, whatever. It's like when people hit a ladder, you put a ladder over somebody and you hit the ladder with a chair, same concept. I think that's what they were going for. Unfortunately for poor Eddie Edwards, Sami Callihan was way off the mark. And he swung a baseball bat full force and hit Eddie right in the face. And they showed this thing from a bunch of different angles. At no point does that bat really, in my view, come anywhere close to the chair. They say, well, you know, the chair slipped. I don't know what they were watching. The chair was in one position, and Sami swung, and he swung in a completely different position. It wasn't even close. He hit him right in the eye. And he suffered, Eddie did, a broken orbital bone. He suffered a broken nose. If that's all he suffered, he got off very, very, very lucky. He could have died. You hit somebody full force in the eye with a baseball bat, you could kill him. You can kill somebody. Forget all the other injuries. So he's very lucky. He could have lost his eye. He even said, he did an interview with TMZ, Eddie did, and he said, I was worried, you know, I had my hand over my eye and I saw all the blood and I was worried when I pulled my hand away I was going to see an eyeball. Where the eyeball was going to be hanging out. So he's lucky to even be able to see out of that eye today. Obviously, it was an accident. I don't think there was any malice at all. It wasn't an intentional bat shot to the face. But Jim Cornette, I guess, saw the clip online and he chimed in and he said, I just saw this for the first time and Eddie Edwards should have beaten the shit out of this stupid fuck. He set it up. He set it up shoddy, was careless with his shitty swing, and they should not have been doing it to begin with. Who the fuck trained Sami Callihan? I'm hot. So Jim Cornette was none too happy. Sami Callihan, seeing an opportunity clearly to build heat and build interest in this, responded. He said, this hurts, Jimmy. I'll just keep watching my bank account go up. That tweet seemingly triggered Cassius Ohno, who, of course, works for NXT, and has probably worked a bunch of matches with Sami Callihan before. In fact, they were probably in NXT at the same time when Callihan was there as Solomon Crow. So he chimed in, he saw that tweet, and Ohno said, really? There is zero correlation between how much money you make and what happened in that ring. You should be embarrassed. And then in all caps, he writes, ashamed. Now, I will say, I am not completely convinced that they didn't talk about this privately and, you know, Ohno was just trying to kind of fan the flames and do Sami a favor by making him out to be more of an asshole, to make him look like more of a heel. I don't know. I'm not totally convinced that that wasn't what was going on here, but let's take him at face value. He's very upset. He was very upset. Callahan sent in a kayfabe video response, because TMZ has been all over this story. They've been covering this like it was a shoot. Like, you know, it was... Well, they've been covering it like a shoot in that they're not covering it like, this guy, you know, he tried to kill you. It was like, you guys did not intend for this to happen. A mistake was made. And they interviewed Eddie to see how he was. But then Callahan sends a video in that was clearly in complete work mode, saying that I'm not sorry for a single thing that happened, and I'm very upset that you're interviewing Eddie Edwards. You should be interviewing me. And then he said, by the way, fuck Jim Cornette. So obviously it was just a complete kayfabe response in this video here from Sami Callihan. Very weird to see TMZ running this, because TMZ normally, I mean, say what you want to about them. They have broken legitimate stories before, and I've not known them in the past to just blatantly run wrestling angles on their site, but that's what this was. Meanwhile, TMZ, in another story, mentioned that the night this all went down, Sami Callihan was very emotional backstage, as you would imagine he would be. He just hit somebody who's probably a friend of his in the face with a baseball bat. So he was very emotional. He was very apologetic for what happened that night. He even visited Edwards in the hospital. He may have gone to the hospital with him. I don't know. But it's everything that you would expect. It was a mistake. The guy is not really happy that he hit the guy in the face with a bat. He fucked up. He made a mistake. He apologized for it. He was a wreck backstage that night. Now, 2 months later, or whatever it is, it aired on TV, it caused this whole commotion, and they decided that we're going to turn this into an angle. Now, if Eddie Edwards is fine with getting heat on their feud by exploiting the botch and the injury, then, and I'm sure Callahan, like I said, he was completely legitimately, I'm sure, upset over what happened, then I don't see what the issue is here. I don't see what everybody is getting all bent out of shape about. You can make the argument that it was a completely reckless thing and it never should have happened, and that's 100% accurate. I mean, that just never should have happened in the first place. But people are like going after Sami Callihan here, and I'm like, does this guy have a reputation in the business for being reckless and injuring other workers that I'm not aware of here? Because I've never heard that about him before. I mean, maybe he does. But if not, it's like, you know, accidents happen. It was an incredibly stupid spot, no doubt about it. Absolutely insane to even be using a real bat. Even Sting in WCW would use rubber baseball bats most of the time. They bend. Sometimes, you would literally sometimes see them hit somebody with a bat and the bat would bend, okay? And it looked ridiculous, but you know what? I'd rather use a bat like that looks real but isn't than accidentally hit somebody full on in the face with a real baseball bat. But these guys are working an angle out of it now to put more heat on their feud at a time when Impact has no buzz whatsoever. I mean, there's absolutely zero buzz. I don't care. It could be the best wrestling show all week. It doesn't matter. There's no buzz at all about that show. This got them on TMZ multiple times. This got multiple stories out of TMZ. That's why they're promoting the hell out of this. Impact, you kidding me? Impact put a video out that showed the bat shot from like 10 different angles. You could say, well, that's pretty tacky and tasteless. Yeah, it probably is, but they're trying to get as much out of this as they can. The difference between something like this and, for example, what happened with Rosemary and Sexy Star was Sexy Star was shooting on Rosemary. She was trying to injure the poor woman. Rosemary was not in on it. She was not expecting it. She didn't ask for it. That was disgusting. That was on every level. Completely disgusting what happened there. There was no cooperation. That was just pure out-and-out malice. Now, had Impact tried to work an angle out of that, the outcry would have been rightfully swift. This was clearly a mistake. And they're trying to turn it into some kind of a positive to get these two guys some attention. I don't think Sami Callihan is a bad guy. I've never heard that he's a terrible person. I have heard that about certain guys in wrestling from people who have worked with some of these people before. I mean, again, I've not heard this about Sami Callihan. People are going after him like he's the worst person in the world. And the way I look at it, any eyeballs that they can get on that product is a good thing. Just try not to lose any actual eyeballs the next time you do it. Beth from Nashville, Tennessee. I recently rewatched the 1988 Royal Rumble, specifically the 2 out of 3 falls match between the Glamour Girls and the Jumping Bomb Angels for the WWF Women's Tag Team titles. While the match itself was not all that great, I found the concept of women's tag titles very interesting. With all the firsts that the women have gotten over the last few years, do you think WWE should reintroduce these titles? And if so, who would you crown as the inaugural champions? Oh, I think it's not a matter of if. I think it's a matter of when they introduce women's tag team titles. And if anything, the only question is, do they do it on both brands? Do you have two sets of women's tag belts? Is that too many? You know, like you said, they're so hung up on everything. First time everything. First time this, first time that. First time Chamber, first time Rumble, first time Women's Hell in a Cell. Why shouldn't they? Why shouldn't they have their own tag team titles? The problem is the women's divisions on Raw and SmackDown, individually, especially on SmackDown, in my opinion, are not strong enough to support having tag team titles. If you merge the two rosters, then they are. Otherwise, they either need to get their own show on the network, or they need to bring up, and this is what I would do, I would bring up a bunch of new women from NXT after WrestleMania and divide them up between the two brands to just beef those rosters up a little bit. As far as who should hold them, I mean, look, it looks like Sasha and Bayley are on the outs. It looks like Nia and Alexa are going to be Splitsville soon enough as far as their friendship goes, you know, in storyline. Either one of them, I think, Nia, Alexa, Sasha, Bayley, I could see either one of those two, you know, units as tag team champions. For some reason, I like the idea, I was thinking about this, I like the idea of Becky Lynch and Kairi Sane, and I don't even know why, but the idea of them ending up as a team at some point, I like that idea. I just think it would be a fun pairing. I mean, it'd probably be the easiest team in the world to root for, too. Alberto from Laredo, Texas. I was having a debate with a friend, and we were talking about how back during our younger years, we enjoyed wrestling for what it was. Now, thanks to the internet, we rely on other outlets to judge whether a match is good or not. Do you think the internet has ruined your enjoyment of pro wrestling? This is a loaded question, and I wanted to pluck this out of the mailbag and use this here. My answer is no, not at all. It has not ruined my enjoyment of wrestling at all. I'm not sure that without it, the internet, I'm not sure that I would be watching WWE weekly anymore the way that I do. Without the internet, I wouldn't be able to do this podcast. Wouldn't be able to interact with all of you. So I say, God bless the internet. But if I see something that outrages me on the show, you know, I'm not sure what the internet would have to do with that. It's like, you know, when I was watching the end of SmackDown on Tuesday and they started with all the camera zooms and the camera cuts, I turned the show off. Nobody on the internet told me to do that. There was no little voice in my ear telling me to do that. I just said, I can't take this anymore. And I turned it off. When they had that mock match on Raw all those years ago with Trump and Rosie. I didn't need anybody on the internet to tell me that it was shit. I have two functioning eyeballs. Because Sami Callihan hasn't gotten near me, so my eyeballs work just fine. I could watch that match and realize that this match is absolute dog crap. And by the way, the best part of that match was Vince McMahon sitting ringside having to listen to the crowd chant TNA. You can almost see the steam coming out of his ears. That was the best part of that whole match. But, you know, I don't wait to see how many stars a match gets to decide for myself whether the match was good or not. I don't give a shit. Everybody makes such a big deal about star ratings and awards that are given out. Who cares? Who cares? I don't pay attention to any of that stuff most of the time. I mean, it's nice to hear, oh, this thing got a 5-star match and it's, you know, okay, great. So what? You know, it's like, that's why I never got into the idea of having like a similar type of system on like my show. People are like, why don't you rate the matches when you do your pay-per-view reviews on YouTube? You know, you could do like 1 to 10 for every match, or you can do stars or call it something else. I'm like, because I don't want to do that. I'll talk about the match. I'll say whether I thought it was good or not and why, and I'll move on. People put so much stock into this stuff. So I don't need to wait to see how many stars a match gets to decide whether it was good or not. There are plenty of people who disagree with me when I praise a match that they thought was bad, or when I tear a match to shreds and they think I'm being unfair. Oh, you're being hard. Happens all the time. People can think for themselves, but they could still be interested in hearing that other person's opinion. You don't think there are plenty of people who listen to my show who disagree with a good number of things I say, but listen to me anyway because they enjoy the show? Of course, there's a lot of people like that, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. Do you think everybody who listens to sports radio always agrees with what the host says, not based on the phone calls I've heard. Not that I listen to a lot of sports radio, but every now and then I'll put on WFAN here in New York, and believe me, there's a lot of debate going back and forth between the callers and the hosts. That's just the natural banter, back and forth. The internet does not ruin anyone's enjoyment of wrestling unless they let it. Pro wrestling ruins people's enjoyment of pro wrestling when it's bad. When it's good, everybody's happy. Until they find the next thing to complain about, because that's just human nature. Why can't everything be perfect all the time? That's not how the world works. You know, like, the reason that you thought Tugboat against Repo Man was a good match back in the day was because you were 7. When you're 27, or you're 37, you're not seeing things through the same lens. I don't get what's so hard for some people to understand about this. I mean, I'm going off on kind of a different topic a little bit here, but I hear this a lot from people, and it's like, they want you to judge things the same way you used to, as though you're stuck in some kind of time warp. You haven't aged, you haven't grown up, you haven't matured, you haven't gotten married, you haven't had kids, nothing has changed. How come you can't just enjoy things the way you did back in 1998 or 1988? Because people change. They get older. They get smarter. Well, some people get dumber, but most people get smarter, hopefully. They don't watch the show the same way that they used to. If I go back and I watch cartoons that I used to watch when I was a kid, I'm probably not going to watch them the same way. And I used to watch all those cartoons. I used to watch He-Man and Thundercats and the real Ghostbusters, Beavis and Butthead, all that stuff, right? You know, I could still actually go back and watch Beavis and Butthead and enjoy it. But my point is, like, you know, you get older, things change, you look at things a different way. Being on the internet, yeah, you're going to read things about the, you know, goings-on behind the scenes and rumors and stuff. It piques your curiosity. All of a sudden, you become interested maybe less so in what happens on camera and what happens more so off camera. That could be a reality show all by itself. And it is, actually. WWE has a whole bunch of reality shows that take you backstage. I find that stuff far more fascinating. But that's just, it's a natural progression, you know? Again, times change, people get older. If I was watching Raw now, as a 10-year-old male, I'd probably enjoy it a lot more. Because it's a show that is intended for kids. Except when they send Roman Reigns out there to say the word bitch, because I guess that's the cool thing to do. That's not very PG. But it's a kid's show. It's a kid's show that happens to be watched by an awful lot of adults. You don't see it through the same lens anymore. Maybe you've been exposed to other products, other wrestling shows that you think are far more exciting than WWE. I know, I know that's getting a little bit away from what you were originally asking, but I think we need to be really careful not to blindly assign blame to the internet for why people complain about wrestling. The internet gives you a voice to do that, but why do people complain about SmackDown Live? Why do people complain about repetitive matches? Why do people complain about these things? Think about the why and put the blame where it belongs. Wrestling has profited greatly from the internet. Social media, on the other hand, I think there's a fair number of wrestlers out there who would be well suited to stay the hell off social media. It would probably do their careers a lot of good. But just be very careful when we talk about, you know, blaming the internet, you know, for why people don't seem to enjoy wrestling. There's a lot of reasons why people don't seem to enjoy the product. And I would hardly say that the internet is the reason or the main reason. Ben from Fresno, what do you make of the post-wrestling career trajectories of Steve Austin and The Rock when you compare them? Do you find it shocking how much of a bigger star Rock is than Austin these days? Do you find it odd that Austin did not follow the same path that Rock did? Austin will always be the bigger wrestling star, in my opinion, but I find it weird when I look at the difference in popularity now between the two. No, I mean, Rock, to me, just screams star when you look at him. He's a better actor than Austin is. You know, you talk about him being a big movie star. Rock's pretty good. He's actually a pretty good actor. Austin is great in those direct-to-DVD action movies I've seen him in. But Rock is just on another level altogether. You know, he's actually turned into a damn good actor. And I also, you know, physically, he's just a gigantic man. Not that Austin is in bad shape at all. But he's had a ton of injuries. And he's also almost 10 years older than The Rock is. You know, Hollywood is a younger man's business. Rock isn't as young as he used to be, but he's a hell of a lot younger than Steve Austin. And also, don't think that Austin's southern accent doesn't work against him, because I'm sure it does. So there's a lot of reasons I think Rock went on to be a much bigger star, big movie star, and Austin hasn't. Hogan tried, he failed. You know, look, it's not easy to break into Hollywood. John Cena's having some success now. He's another one I can see becoming a big movie star as he gets away from wrestling. Dave Bautista. He's done pretty well for himself, too. But that's three people. Out of how many wrestlers over the years that have pursued a career in film? How many times have you read stories about wrestlers who have moved? Or have talked about, I'm going to move out to LA. Start reading scripts. Going to try to break into movies. How many times do you think that works out? Not very often. It's a hard thing to do. You know, if you're Roddy Piper, for every They Live, there's a Hell Comes to Frogtown. Now all the Hell Comes to Frogtown fans are going to come after me. But it's true. You know, Rock is a more versatile performer. And as we all know, if you follow him on social media, the guy's a raging workaholic. I mean, he's in the gym at 3 o'clock in the morning every friggin' morning. And he's working on so many movies at once, he doesn't seem to have any free time. I don't know how he has free time for anything. He's a workaholic. I don't know that Austin, frankly, wants to be as busy as The Rock is. You know, I get the sense that Steve Austin is a man who enjoys the simple life. He enjoys his podcast and doing some stuff like that. He enjoys his downtime during hunting season. And otherwise, just sort of wants to be left alone. Nara, from Morgan Hills, California. I was looking at the timeline on Bret Hart's first WWF title win, which came at a TV taping, and then he defended it a month later on Saturday night's main event. Why did they not just have him win the championship there? He probably didn't want to lose in Canada. No, I'm kidding. I would think if Vince already knew he was getting rid of Davey Boy and the Ultimate Warrior, which he ultimately did, with all the heat from the steroid stuff, and then they got popped, I think it was for shipments, overseas shipments of HGH, I think it was. And they were really getting serious. I mean, Vince was really, you know, cracking down. I think they had brought in a new doctor around that time into the company, and they were really trying to crack down. So if he had any sense at all that these guys were going to be on their way out, or he was going to fire them or suspend them, they probably wanted to get the belt on Brett sooner rather than later. It could have been a situation where it's like, we can't wait. We got to do this now. The Saturday night's main event episode that you mentioned was actually taped later that same month. It wasn't months later. It was later that same month. The Bulldog title change did not air until then, so I don't think they would have wanted to do both the WWF title and the Intercontinental title changing hands on the same show. I mean, not that that hasn't happened to pay-per-views, but to wait until Saturday night's main event, which was only like, what, a week or two, I think, before Survivor Series, and do two major title changes on that one show that night, I don't know that they would have wanted to do that. They were in Canada when Brett won the title. It was in Saskatoon, but I don't buy that as being the reason why they would have put the belt on him then. I think it was a nice, you know, oh, by the way, we're in Canada, and Brett's family is here, and so that's cool, but I just think it had more to do with what was happening with Bulldog and Warrior, and again, not wanting to do two title changes on the same Saturday night's main event. We'll end with two buy or sells here. First one here from Sam from Townsville, Australia. See, there we go. One of our Aussie listeners. Buy or sell on the best Shinsuke Nakamura Wrestle Kingdom match. His match against Hiroshi Tanahashi at Wrestle Kingdom 8. His match against Kota Ibushi at Wrestle Kingdom 9, or his match against AJ Styles at Wrestle Kingdom 10. Well, I'll be honest with you. I'm pretty sure I've seen that Tanahashi match. I don't really remember much about it. It's been so long since I've seen it. I do remember the other two, and I got a buy on the Kota Ibushi match, Wrestle Kingdom 9. Now, both of them were great matches, but I remember watching the match with Ibushi at Wrestle Kingdom 9, and That was an exciting match. That, it really was, and I still remember that. And of the two, I'd have to say that was the stronger one. So I would buy on that. If I had to rank them, I'd go Ibushi 1, AJ 2, and then maybe, you know, Tanahashi number 3. But again, I just don't remember too much about that match. But the Ibushi match was just sick. And finally here, Annette from Brooklyn, New York, buy or sell, with Ronda Rousey signing with WWE and her being a big outside name. This could open the gates to other athletes coming in full-time or for an angle. If, let's say, these two athletes decided to leave their respective sport to join WWE, buy or sell on who would have a bigger impact and success, LeBron James from the NBA or Tom Brady from the NFL? I just thought, I got that question, I thought it was kind of interesting. And anytime you mention Tom Brady, you get a very divided opinion from people. I think less so LeBron, more so Brady. I got to buy on LeBron. It was an easy question to answer, though. I didn't really hesitate when I thought about it. Buy on LeBron, sell on Tom Brady. And Tom Brady may be the best, you know, and people say, oh, he's the best quarterback of all time. He may be the best NFL player of all time. Look, when all is said and done, LeBron is probably going to go down as the greatest NBA player. So they have that in common. When I look at the two of them side by side, first of all, LeBron is a fan. I have no idea if Tom Brady is a wrestling fan. I don't get the sense he is. I've never heard him talk about wrestling. I don't think he's ever been to a show. Who knows for sure? Maybe he's a closet fan. But we know LeBron James is a huge fan. He's, you know, he follows it. He watches it. He's been to a few shows before. And so I think if you go into something like this, like Rousey is a big wrestling fan. She's been to PWG shows. She's been, you know, all kinds of shows. She's a big wrestling fan. I think that helps her a lot coming in. I think if LeBron were to come in and dedicate himself 100% to it, him being a fan, unlike Brady, is going to help him out a lot. LeBron gets it. He's also a lot younger. And he's in better shape to have a wrestling match, I think, than Tom Brady would be. I could see LeBron doing some trash talking too, cutting it up on promos. Brady seems like the quiet type. So I think for all those reasons, LeBron would be a slam dunk choice. If I had the choice between the two of them, I'm picking LeBron. And I think he would have more success than Brady would. Keep sending in those mailbag questions, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Don't forget the meetup invite on Facebook for our New Orleans meetup. It is up on the fan page. I'll post links on Twitter and in the Facebook group as well. Please go there and RSVP if you think you might be able to attend or if you might be interested in attending Sunday, April 8th, beginning at 11 a.m. at Pat O'Brien's. I'm also going to be going to Wale Mania. It's actually Wale Mania 4 this year, the Thursday, April 5th. It's actually the night that I fly in. I fly in earlier that afternoon. That night is Wale Mania at Republic NOLA. I was at the one last year in Orlando. It was a lot of fun. A ton of wrestlers showed up too, like WWE people. I think the New Day showed up. There were a lot of people there. What happens is you have this panel. They do like a live podcast. A lot of wrestling personalities are up on the dais and they're just sort of talking and answering questions and telling, you know, jokes and stuff. And then it just turns into one big party after all the wrestling stuff is over and done with. They still have general tickets available, I know that. So if you do come, find me and say hello. Hopefully I'll see you there. That'll be my first night in New Orleans. Looking forward to it. Don't forget, you can listen to this podcast now on Spotify. We are available on Spotify. If you have Spotify in your car, for example, you can listen to us there if that makes it easier. If you'd be so kind to take 2 minutes, head on over to iTunes or Stitcher. You can leave a five-star rating or give us a star rating. We are a five-star rated podcast. Yeah, I lied before when I said I don't do star ratings. We do on iTunes and Stitcher. You can go there, leave a review. Anything like that supports the show, so I would appreciate that. I will be back, hopefully, fingers crossed, for a brand new podcast next Sunday. That would be episode 538. Is that Fastlane? I think it is. I believe so. Yes, actually, Fastlane is next Sunday. So I guess we'll be doing Fastlane predictions, talking about the pay-per-view and all the other big stories of the week. So I will see you guys back here then. Until then, be well, stay safe. If you were on the Northeast, like I said, if you got battered by that storm a few days ago, hopefully you guys are doing okay or doing better than you were. It's pretty scary stuff. I'll see you guys back here next week. And until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solemonster sounds off.
They have Kane in the back. This is what he said. Tonight, I will delight as I enter the abyss with a fellow monster. But it is I who will climb out alone and with a smile across my face.
Oh, oh my God.
God. What do they think this is, Shakespeare? I was driving yesterday, and some asshole double parks his car in the service lane. I should have cut a promo the way the WWE would script one out for me. Why art thou parking like one's smelly orifice? I wish 1,000 deaths upon thee. Then I could do a fucking tope, and we could fade to commercial.
Since 2007, The Salamonster Sounds Off. Available at thesalamonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solo Monsters Sound Off.